Yes, indeed. I am joined this morning by Teresa Rooney, master gardening, a gardener here on CCR. She does some master gardening in her own garden. But she's helping you out today either by phone or by text. And you know how busy we get. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning, Denny. How are you today?
I'm doing quite well. Thank you for asking. Hope you are as well. I was looking at that forecast, and boy, I tell you, the rain we really needed, and it was great that we had what we got. But I don't see anything but maybe a tiny chance Thursday night, maybe 20%, just the whole week this really hot week.
So we're going to lose a lot of what we gained. So,
Absolutely.
So water those trees and shrubs, people.
Yep, and watch your watering ordinances for sure.
Very much so.
If you have, again, any kind of a lawn or garden question, you know how busy we are this particular hour, call Teresa or text, whichever is easier for you, at 651-461-9226. We're getting to, I'll tell you what, let's grab a text right now before we get too far behind, and then you and I can talk.
Okay.
Do blueberry bushes need to be pruned in the spring, or can they be pruned in the fall?
You can prune them in the fall if you need to. I would definitely, though, look at the Extension website, extension.umn.edu, to verify that. And you don't want to prune a lot. You just would be pruning out old wood to encourage new growth for next year.
Speaking of pruning,
your pruning should be almost done by the season, by right now. You should finish all your pruning by August 1st. So you're 18 days, 19 days past pruning. So stop feeding your perennials. Do continue to feed your lawn with your winter. And stop pruning, because the plants have to now start to become dormant. Even though it's only the middle of August, you don't want to cause a flush of growth.
I know it
sounds kind of weird, because in September everybody's going to be saying, what can I prune now? And I'm going to tell you nothing.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I was thinking about lawns themselves, and I know we'll get questions about this. Given the hot weather, and usually the window of opportunity for seeding, grass seeding, is like, what, middle of August to the middle of September? I wonder if we could stretch it this year.
We might be able to, depending upon what we think fall is going to be like, and when you think, if you think your grass is going to get, you know, have 6 to 8 weeks to grow, and before you're going to get that first frost, before you get the first snowfall that kills the grass that stays.
We'll be watching the forecast for sure. All right, Teresa, let's grab a phone call. Gary is first up here, calling in from St. Louis Park, I believe, this morning. Gary, good morning. What's your question for Teresa?
Hi, good morning, Denny. Good morning, Teresa. Teresa, I just had my lawn aerated yesterday. Mm-hmm. How long should I wait before I mow it, and how often should I water it?
I would water it just as you have been watering it. That needs about an inch of water a week. So you want, between you and Mom Nature, do that. You can back off a little bit on the mowing if it's not growing very quickly. In this heat, it may or may not be growing. With this extra water we've gotten, you may see a flush of growth, so you may have to water. But the aeration should not impact how you need to water or the mowing. And good to aerate, because you're setting yourself up for some good overseeding if you need it. Excellent. Well done, Gary.
Yeah, Gary, I got to do that. Have that done too, this fall, or this summer, I should say. What is the best exercise, Teresa? What is the best plant ornamental grasses in the spring, or now, or in the fall? As far as ornamental grasses, when to plant?
You know, with the heat that we're going to have with the next week or so, I wouldn't do a lot of planting right now. It's stressful on you and on the plants, so don't do it right now. Fall's a great time to get those ornamental grasses in, the prairie grasses, and it's a great time to find bargains at the nurseries. And so fall's a great time. So spring or fall works either one really well. I like fall because it's a little cooler on you. Do it earlier fall, like mid-September or earlier. Get those plants in. You can get good deals at the markets. And then your plants get really well rooted. And if you want to, just give them a little extra protection the very first year going through winter, with a little maybe extra mulch around them just for the first year, and then they'll be fine after that.
Now, what's the proper pronunciation? I remember my mom called them peonies. Are they peonies or peonies?
Yes. You can do either one. One is more British, one is more American. They're both fine. It's like clematis or clematis. You can do either one. In the United States, normally we are emphasizing the second syllable, and in Britain, in England, it's the first syllable. So six one, half a dozen of the other. You can be really posh if you want and say peonies if you want to. Whatever you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Tomato.
Okay. Tomato, yes.
The question is, though, is it a good time to transplant peonies and rhubarb?
Yes, it is. Yes, this is a great time to do it. Your irises, your peonies, your rhubarb, if you want to. Spring is better for rhubarb, but you can do it now. Again, I would just say, do it when it's easier for you and it's easier on the plant. If you're going to have a day or two of slightly cooler weather, do it maybe first thing in the morning or in the later afternoon when it gets a little cooler so the plant can kind of recover overnight. And if you're not dividing the peony, just have the other hole already dug and had your amendments of compost and everything already. And if you're not dividing the peony, just have the other hole already dug and had your amendments of compost and everything already. So you can lift that plant out, disturb the roots as little as possible, plant it in the next pot, place you want to plant it. Make sure that you're planting it high so that the eyes, the little growing red growing pointed tips on the root ball are right at the surface or no more than, say, half an inch to an inch deep. If you plant your peonies too deep, the eyes will become blind and they won't flower for you. If you disturb the roots too much, they may pout for two or three years before they flower again. If you have to divide them, you're probably going to see some lack of flowering for the next few years, but they'll recover and then they'll bloom again.
Okay. I know we have to break momentarily, but we were getting a bunch of phone calls as well as texts. Let's grab a phone call from Faith, calling in from Annandale, I believe, this morning. Faith, good morning. What is your question for Master Gardener Teresa?
Good morning. Okay, good morning. Thank you. I have a balloon flower that used to always just be a moderate size, and then all of a sudden one half of it got real tall and straggly and leggy. Do you have any idea what's going on with that?
It's probably just the temperature, and maybe it got a little extra fertilization on that side of the plant for some reason, or a little extra watering compared to the other. I don't know why it would suddenly just jump up and get a lot taller, but if you don't like it that tall, you can trim it back. Otherwise, just know it'll probably be all normal next year, hopefully, knock on wood. That's an interesting question, Faith.
Thank you, Faith. Gary, calling in from St. Paul this morning, I do believe. Gary, you're on CCO with Master Gardener Teresa Rooney.
Oh, hi. I had an aeration question. I had a section on my lawn that I replanted last year, and it's come in real well. Mm-hmm. I'm going to aerate the lawn. Should I skip that particular area, though? It's Kentucky bluegrass and fescues.
You could aerate it again if there's been a lot of traffic in your yard. If you did the good prep last year when you overseeded or when it's come in, you dug some organic matter in and it hasn't experienced a whole lot of rugby play or wrestling on the lawn right there, you could ignore that section and then just the next time you aerate, just aerate it with the rest of your lawn. So depending upon what your prep work was last year for the planting and how much compaction it's gotten there, that will indicate whether or not you need to aerate. Good luck with that, Gary.
Before we break, I want to grab one more call, and then we'll grab some text messages. Chris, calling in from Egan this morning. Chris, you're on CCO. What is your question, please?
Good morning. I love listening to you guys.
Thank you.
I have a whole bunch of cucumber plants in my garden, and they have produced fantastically. And they're still producing, but the leaves are all dying. Is that normal?
It could have gotten some kind of cucumber disease, a virus or something. As long as it's still producing, I would just say go ahead. Yep, keep going. When you see those leaves start to die, take those off and then sterilize if you're using pruners before you go to the next plant. If you have to cut more, do more pruning with that. But sometimes toward the end of the season, they just get a little stressed and they're more susceptible to lots of diseases. Good luck with that, Chris.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more of our Smart Garden Show here on CCO. I can tell you we are heading today to a high near 95, but the heat index values will be up to about 102. So keep that in mind. Sunny and hot today. Right now on CCO, 71 degrees. Hey, stay with us. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. You're with Master Gardener Teresa Rooney answering those lawn and garden questions. I should remind our listeners, our friends and your colleagues, Julie Weisenhorn and turf expert John Trappi will be with me at the Met. We're doing a one-time show, appearing one time only at the Minnesota State Fair a week from today. So don't miss that. And if you're going to be out there, you can come up to the broadcast center there and you can ask your questions live. Of course, we'll still be taking our phone calls and text messages as well. In the meantime, we'll take your phone calls and text messages this morning on our Smart Garden Show. As I said, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney doing the work. 651-461-9226. Let's see here. Teresa?
Yes.
I'm looking at... Oh, we have so many. All right. Here's a recommendation they request for how and when to plant wild lupin seed. The soil is sandy.
You could plant it in the fall. That would probably be the best time because it does need to go through the winterization, the stratification. Otherwise, you could do a winter sowing in milk jugs in January and then carefully transplant it in the spring as soon as it comes up and the soil is ready. I'd try probably seeding in the fall. Good luck.
Okay. This listener wants to know, how can I tell when my watermelon ready to pick? I picked one already, and it was still green on the inside.
Oh, that's always tricky for me to tell. I have some things in my mind, but I don't know if they're all right. Usually with the squashes and the watermelon is when the stem starts to harden off and you can see that it's starting to die back. Otherwise, I would go to the extension website, extension.umn.edu, and it'll tell you on there all the special ways to do it. There's thumping it and seeing if it has a yellow spot on the bottom and the rest is bright green, but I don't want to tell you the wrong thing because I even have problems picking out watermelon at the supermarket. So,
yeah, we've been having
I would go to the extension website for that one.
I don't know what it is. It's my lack of talent, but we love watermelon here, mm-hmm. and I've been picking them up here and there. And you know, maybe if there's six watermelon, maybe one is good, maybe two. And I'm
and
not
sometimes
sure
sometimes they get so overwatered that the taste kind of washes out, and you just never know how they're going to be. I know it has something to do with the size of the bands, the striping on them, and then that they do need the yellow spot on the bottom. That means they've been sitting for a while, so that part has started not to be photosynthesizing as much anymore. But other than that, and a hollowy sound, I don't know.
Now, I'm going to pick up another one this time. I know that Jerry Untied has grown some good stuff. So
that'll
check
be good
that out
because the local stuff is really good.
Yep.
Yeah.
Texter says, greetings. We have 30-some trees in our development with, quote, gall mites. Will they recover?
Oh, they'll be just fine. As long as the leaves are still green and they're still photosynthesizing, sometimes even the gall mites will kind of crinkle the leaves a little bit, but the trees will recover just fine. You may never have them again. You may get them every year, but gall mites and trees kind of go together. So, yep, that's just little places on the tree on the leaves where they kind of have funny bumps, and there's just little insects in there either hatching out or it's just a reaction to the insect biting it, and like a mosquito bite when we get a little irritation. So, nothing to worry about.
All right, good. Another texter says this, Teresa, should hydrangeas be pruned in the fall after blooming?
That one's totally up to the kind of hydrangea it is, where it sets its flowers, and if you have a new hydrangea that is more of a tree or a shrub that you're trying to get some height on, sometimes those flowers, you may need to prune off some of the flowers so that the winter doesn't get a lot of snow on them and drag those branches down and break them. But I would look at what kind of hydrangea you have and figure out what the pruning is, whether it blooms on old wood or new wood or both. And that will tell you how to prune it. You could look at the extension website, extension.umn.edu, and also go out to the Arboretum, which was a gem in Minnesota. They have a hydrangea testing area where they've planted a lot of hydrangeas, and you can see what your specific hydrangea is supposed to be looking like. And there may be some more information out there, cards and things like that. That'll give you some information. But the extension website will tell you exactly which hydrangea and how to prune it.
But yeah, get to the Arboretum. I mean, you talk about if you're planning on planting various shrubs or trees or whatever the case may be in your landscape, they have you can visualize that. You can see
see what it looks like. And sometimes you can get ideas like, oh, I never thought to combine those two perennials together or those three perennials together. Or you don't want to walk 3 mile drive, take a tram tour. Go up to the Beeline shuttle and get up to the bee area and the urban farm at the Arb. And it's just an amazing place to learn a lot of stuff. And bring your visitors. Yep. They'll want to move to Minnesota just to come to the Arboretum.
The University of Minnesota Landscape Arboretum. Just go west on Highway 5 and get online. You can make reservations very easy, and it makes it very easy to park there, as I've said before. All right. We need to take a break for that hot forecast. We'll do that. Have another half hour of our Smart Garden Show on the way. 651-461-9226. It's a Saturday in CCO land from News Talk 830. This is WCCO. And good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney answering those lawn and garden questions at our usual number. If it's a phone call you want or a text, either way, 651-461-9226. Teresa, speaking of Master Gardener, which you are, what's the deal with the program? Is this the beginning of that program now or what?
This is the beginning of registration for it, so go ahead and go to the Extension website and go down near the bottom, and it says Become a Master Gardener Volunteer. Click on that, and it'll talk you right through it. The registration or the your submission is due by October 1st, but it's going to be hot and icky today, so why not do it today? Get the paperwork going and go like that. There are scholarships available if you need them. That always is a possibility. We do have some of those available. Or you can send an email to MG for Master Gardener Web at extension.umn and send your email off to request the paperwork. So please come and join us. We would love to have you.
What about qualifications? I'm thinking, well, what if I just sign up? Well, I don't have gardening experience, just minimal.
Denny, you could be a wonderful master gardener. Master gardeners are people who love to learn about gardening, want to share research-based information with their community, and love to talk to people about gardening. So if that's what you are, if that's the kind of person you are, you don't need to have extensive gardening background. It helps, but it's not necessary. You just need that desire to learn about research-based information and wanting to share that with your community. Master gardeners are volunteers. We work in our community to bring that information to the people that are in our communities so we can all grow healthy lawns and trees and shrubs and vegetables and flowers, and we can learn about watering wisely and taking care of our environment and nearby nature and all those kind of wonderful things. So if you think you are interested in the program, please apply.
Very good. you and your colleagues are educators. That's what you do.
We are educators, yep. And if you love just talking about gardening and geeking out on it, you're a master gardener. Come and join us.
Perfect candidate. All right. Back to work. I have, Techner says, 14 Techne arborvitaes as a hedge. They are around 25 years old, quite tall. I want to top them off. Is that a good idea?
Topping is never a really good idea. If you need to prune them back a little bit, you can. If they're not going to be running into wires and that, you don't really need to top them. You can do a little pruning. Just get up there every year and do a little pruning and keep the heights down a little bit. They want to be probably about 25 feet tall, so they've got another 11, 12 feet to go. And they don't stop growing at 25 feet. They will keep growing. So always remember to look at the size of the plant that you're planting, what its expected height and width is, so you plant it in the right place.
Very good. Here's a good question. What exactly is overseeding? Is it just putting down seed, or do you need additional soil, et cetera?
Oh, that's a really good question. So overseeding is something we normally have do in our lawns because our lawns get a little sparse sometimes. So what you want to do is you want to mow your grass a little bit shorter than you normally would, and then you want to rake up all the extra stuff that's out there so you can see some of the bare patches. And then you just sprinkle seeds over the area that you need to oversow. You press them into the soil you press them so they have really good seed-to-soil contact. Because if they're just floating up in the air, they're never going to root and sprout those little seeds. They need to be on the ground. And then you just keep that moist until the seeds sprout. Treat them like little babies when they're tall enough to have been mowed 2 to 3 times because the seedlings have gotten that big. Then you can apply your winterizer. So you've kind of got to get your seedlings, your overseeding done earlier in the fall rather than later if you're going to do winterizer.
All right. Good question. Texter says, didn't prune my bushes at all this year. Will they be okay until after they flower in the spring?
They should be just fine. They may just be a little scraggly looking. If something's whacking you in the face when you're going to be shoveling winter snow or something like that, you can prune that one little branch back if you need to. Otherwise, for the most part, plants don't need to be pruned. We just do it for aesthetic reasons and to keep them within the space and the aesthetic that we're looking for.
Okay. Another listener says, I planted 2 apple trees this spring. They did not produce any apples yet. Do I need to fertilize them is one question. Also, is there an organic way to protect them from pests?
Yes. Yes and yes. So if you want to fertilize them, I would probably wait till the spring and just top dress with a little compost. It depends on what kind of roots they are on, what rootstock they're on. If they're on a dwarf rootstock, those trees will probably be producing when they're about 3 to 5 years old. If they're on a semi-dwarfing rootstock, that limits the size to a certain height. That will be 5 to 7 years before they're old enough to produce fruits for you. And then if they're on just a regular rootstock, not a dwarfing rootstock, that could take up to 10 years. Honeycrisp take a little longer to produce, so you may want to add a few years onto that, and you should be fine then. What was the second question? It was feeding it and...
About pests.
Thank you, and pests. And organic pests. So there are some ways you can make sure you clean up any fruit that falls and any leaves that fall down. Move those out into your compost bins. You can protect the fruit when it does come out with little bags, little Ziploc bags or nylon stocking bags. And you can also spray with a kale and spray if you need to protect against pests that way. So those are some of your alternatives for organic pest control. And you do need 2 different kinds of apples. So if you put in 2 Honeycrisp, hopefully there's some apple around the area that will be able to cross-pollinate with that. The 2 Honeycrisp will not cross-pollinate. You need 2 different varieties of apples.
All right. Yeah, good point. This listener, they said that we will be in Texas from Thanksgiving to late April. Can we prune our apple tree in November?
You can. I would do it the very latest that you can, or if you're coming back early April, wait till early April to do it. If you can, wait as long as close to your leaving in November as possible. Otherwise, if it's an early April arrival, do it early April. But you can. If we're into a really... We haven't had much frost in your area, and it's still really green and growing, and we haven't even gone into the second. We're still in just a hot winter, and fall doesn't even look like to be showing up in November. I would wait until spring then and just do a late pruning at that time.
Okay. This listener wants to know, what causes bright yellow yarrow flowers to lose their luster and turn into an almost rusty brown?
Oh, that means the flower has gone past. It's basically dead. It's like if you have a rose and you pick it, and then it slowly dies and turns brown. So it's just the flowers have gone past their prime. They've flowered. They've done what they're going to do, and the flowers are now dead. You can cut those off if you don't want to look at them very long.
Okay. Here's a lawn question, and I just remind our listeners, Teresa, that along with Julie Weisenhauer, next Saturday, a week
John
from today
will be
at the
there.
Fair, yes, the Turf Guru Dr. John Trappi will be answering those turf questions, but here's one I know you can field. Is it a good time to plant grass seed, and should I aerate before I plant?
I would aerate before you plant, and then I would, so you can aerate now, I would probably wait till the weather's just a titch cooler toward the end of August, if possible, into the beginning of September, or if we get a week where it's going to be fairly cool, fairly normal, not this hot stuff today. That's just ridiculous. You don't need to be out there. You have to keep the grass, the seed, moist. So think about how you're going to keep that seed moist on a 105-degree temp day, or what it feels like. You'd have to be out there watering two or three times. And are you willing to do that till the grass sprouts? And are you willing to take care of all that extra watering it needs in the heat and those that stressful time? So I'd back off, but I'd aerate now, get the ground ready, and then when it cools down just a little bit, go ahead and overseed with your grass seed.
Very good. Just joining us, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney, answering those lawn and garden questions on our Smart Garden Show. Here's another one. We have an ornamental crabapple tree that is so much lower growth we cannot mow under it very well. Can we prune or trim the lower branches, or will it ruin the shape forever?
If you want to limit up a little bit, you can. I would probably do that in the spring, and you may want to mark some branches right now, tie a little bit of ribbon or string around them, so when you go out there in January, February, or March, and you're pruning, limbing up the apple tree, remember you only want to take off like one quarter of the entire amount of growth. So look at the whole big tree and think, I'm only going to remove these three branches this year, and next year I'll remove the next three branches and limit up a little bit so I can get under there and mow. Otherwise, just limit up slightly and grow something else instead of grass under there. Put just a mulch down or do a little woodland garden under there, and that could be very attractive with your crabapple. But once you start limbing it up, you are making it into more of a tree shape than a bush shape, and so that doesn't necessarily wreck the view. It just changes what it looks like.
Okay. This listener wants to know, how do I get rid of webworms in my birch tree?
You know, the easiest way is just to, if you can, do some cutting them out, or just destroy the webbing. If it's too far up, I would go to the extension website. The webworms are protected with their webbing, so it's hard to get chemicals in there. You may want to use a systemic, but then again, that impacts anything that eats the tree, including pretty butterflies and things like caterpillars of good butterflies that you want to have. So I would go to the extension website, extension.umn.edu. And if that looks like something that might be beyond you, call a certified arborist and have them come out and ask them what they would do and have them treat the tree for you. They would be able to get up in there with ladders and things and take out the webbing or do some sprays if they need to. Otherwise, if it's a one-shot deal, it may defoliate the tree this year, but it'll be fine next year. Just baby your tree a little bit.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, Teresa. Be right back with more of our Smart Garden Show. We are on our way, temperature-wise, to 95 today. Right now on CCO, 71 degrees. Stay with us. Temperature-wise, to 95 today. Right now on CCO, 71 degrees. Stay with us. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday on CCO in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney answering those lawn and garden questions at 651-461-9226. And Teresa, as usual, we have many of them. And again, we always like to urge our listeners to check out the University of Minnesota website, extension.umn.edu, a great source of information about lawns and gardens, you name it, it's in there.
And there's lots of pretty pictures to look at, too. So
yes,
enjoy that during the heat.
Too.
Stay inside, get a cool beverage, hydrate, and just look at the website.
Yeah, extension.umn.edu, we love it. Texter says something I can relate to here. Along the south side of my house, I planted, they say, a tomato plant in each of two raised 2x4 planter boxes, one tomato plant in the ground. The plant in the ground is growing well. The two in the raised boxes are withering at the top. Is this a problem due to being in the boxes or due to the amount of watering, do you think?
It's probably the stress from being in hotter soil, lots of extra water and lots of extra heat, and the roots only have the little box to look for food in and water, and they don't have the coolness of all the entire soil like the ones in the soil do. So even though the soil at top feels warm, there's a little more moisture, a little bit deeper, and our pots aren't that deep. So it's just a more stressful situation in that little container. Even though it's a good-sized container, it's still a little more stressful situation.
Okay.
So, yeah.
This listener says via text, after splitting hosta, the section that was taken off is growing and healthy but never gets any bigger. Is that normal?
That's not normal. It depends on when they split them. If it's just this year, the plant has to get new roots and everything else, and it's going to take a little while to get bigger again. If it's been a few years, I'd consider maybe top dressing that area a little bit, and the soil may be a little too lean, or there may be some other reasons why the plant isn't getting bigger. But I would think it's probably something to do with the soil if the plant has been divided for a number of years.
Okay. We have the smartest of listeners, and we do have, obviously, here somebody who knows about to help us out with picking a good watermelon.
Oh, good. I was hoping somebody would share that information.
He says, for watermelon, look for the curly pigtail on the vine opposite the stem to the watermelon. It should be dried up and brown.
Okay.
The field spot should be deep yellow, not pale yellow.
Ah, okay.
Sound is subjective.
That
now
is
for
true.
Squash, the stem should be dried up completely. Cantaloupe stems will easily separate from the melon when ripe. So there you go. You've got.
And I've heard about pressing your thumbnail into the rind to see if it goes in really easy. But then I think, well, I don't want all those little pokies in my vegetables out there in the ground, because that just lets diseases and bugs and everything else in. So I've always wondered about that one. It's like, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Well, I may test out that theory, advice from
a nice
from this,
deep yellow spot, and yeah. Then yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the color should not be just pale yellow.
Pale yellow.
Deep
it's just
yellow.
Yep. Deep yellow.
City.
Okay.
Okay. Can
Thank
I spray
you.
For
Thank
Creeping
you,
Charlie
person.
Now? And what's the best spray to use?
Creeping Charlie, I'd probably wait just a little while longer. It's too hot. So any spray you get and any herbicide you get, it will say it kills Creeping Charlie. So you want to make sure that Creeping Charlie is listed as one of the plants it's going to kill. Then you want to read the instructions. And the instructions will say something like, do not spray on windy days, which we're supposed to have. Do not spray if the temperature is above such and such a degrees. It's usually like 82 to 85 degrees, which we're going to have for the next week at least. So you have to consider those things. Just make sure you read the label. When you're at the nursery getting the herbicide, if you can't figure out which one, because there's like 4 different kinds or 12 different kinds out there, talk to the nursery people. They will know which one will work best for Creeping Charlie. They'll show you that it kills Creeping Charlie on the label, and then they should instruct you to read the label and understand it and give you some pointers. Not on a windy day. Even a breeze of 5 miles an hour is way too fast, and not on a hot day or a really cold day. So you have to read the instructions, because each one will be slightly different.
Okay. Here's a good candidate for the university website, I think. What bush is good that does not need trimming? It would be in full sun.
It really depends how big you want to get it. And here, again, I think Denny's right. Go to the Extension website. You can actually go to one part of the Extension website. It's a landscaping part, and it will actually, you can put in, I want a bush for full sun, sandy soil, getting 3 to 6 feet tall and 3 feet wide. And it will bring up bushes that are that for zone 3 or 4 or whatever you're in. So it's a wonderful feature of the Extension website. So please go to the Extension website, extension.umn.edu, and you'll go right into that list of plants. It's just amazing.
Another texter says, why is one of our 2 elderberry plants wilting? They're separated by 40 feet.
In the one area, the plant could be a weaker plant, so it's under more stress. It's not dealing with the stress as well. It could be that there's a big rock under there, so it's not, the soil isn't as deep as you think it is. It's not getting as much water. The other plant may be getting more water than you think it's getting, and so it's a little healthier. It just, there's a difference between the plants and or the soil conditions, and then the stress of the situation we're in. So you just have to figure out what could be going on there. The plant may need just a little more water than it's getting. You can always trap dress with a little compost.
A couple of minutes to go on the show, Teresa. A lawn question, an aeration question. Does aeration harm silver maple roots?
It can. Yes, it can. So if you've got an aerator, which is where it pulls up the plugs, it's actually punching down into the soil, and it will punch into those silver maple roots, the surface roots. So you want to avoid those roots if at all possible. So don't aerate under your silver maple, or if you know there's not roots in this one area, you can aerate there. But you don't want to aerate over tree roots. That is correct.
This listener would like you to address a perennial grass seed versus annual grass seed.
Okay, so that's a really good question. So when you look at the grass seed that you're buying for overseeding for your lawn or starting your lawn, it will tell you it's this much, this kind of Kentucky bluegrass and this kind of perennial rye and this annual rye and this whatever it's got in there. It'll tell you the fescues. It'll tell you all that's in there and the percentages. You want to get mostly perennial grasses. The annual grasses come up a little bit faster. They hold the place so that the other seeds around them, the perennials, can kind of get going a little bit, but then the annual grass will die over winter, and that will leave little holes all over where those grasses died. So then the perennials then can grow and take over that spot. So they're kind of like a little placeholder for a bit. But if you have a grass seed mix that's really heavy on annuals, they're all going to die in the wintertime. So then only maybe half your plants are coming up again next year. They're growing again next year. So the annual grass is just really a placeholder, and you don't need a big percentage. So good grass seed mixes won't have a high percentage usually of the annual rye grasses. That's a really good question, though.
Yeah, it was a good question, and we have less, probably maybe 30 seconds, if you can give us a thumbnail sketch of how to become a master gardener, how to sign up.
Okay, go to the Extension website, extension.umn.edu, click on how to become a master gardener. It'll talk you through it, and there are scholarships available if you need them, but we'd love to have you. If you like talking plants and like to learn about Extension, our research-based information, and sharing that with your neighbors, you can become a master gardener.
Yeah, and again, don't forget to visit the Arboretum. Just go west on Highway 5. You're going to love that place. Just arrange it all online. Very easy to do.
You do need to register online. Yep.
All right. Teresa, thank you so much for all the good work. Always a pleasure. And just a reminder that next Saturday, week from today, we'll be at the fair with Julie and Dr. John Trappi. Teresa, let's talk again soon.
We will do that. Everybody stay cool and hydrate. Take care.
Thank you so much. Master Gardener Teresa Rooney. Next up on CCO, get those home improvement questions ready for Andy Lindis from Lindis Construction. Probably a lot of hail questions. The damage is one of the questions we'll be hearing about next hour here on News Talk A3OW CCO. Yes, indeed. I am joined this morning by Teresa Rooney, master gardener here on CCO. She does some master gardening in her own garden, but she's helping you out today either by phone or by text. And you know how busy we get. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning, Denny. How are you today?
I'm doing quite well. Thank you for asking. Hope you you are as well. I was looking at that forecast, and boy, I tell you, the rain we really needed, and it was great that we had what we got, but I don't see anything but maybe a tiny chance Thursday night, maybe 20%, just the whole week this really hot week.
We're going to lose a lot of what we gained.
Absolutely.
So water those trees and shrubs, people.
Yep, and watch your watering ordinances for sure.
Very much so.
If you have, again, any kind of a lawn or garden question, and you know how busy we are this particular hour, call Teresa or text, whichever is easier for you, at 651-461-9226. We're getting to, I'll tell you what, let's grab a text right now before we get too far behind, and then you and I can talk.
Okay.
Do blueberry bushes need to be pruned in the spring, or can they be pruned in the fall?
I believe you can prune them in the fall if you need to. I would definitely, though, look at the Extension website, extension.umn.edu, to verify that. And you don't want to prune a lot. You just would be pruning out old wood to encourage new growth for next year.
Speaking of pruning,
your pruning should be almost done by the season, by right now. You should finish all your pruning by August 1st. So you're 18 days, 19 days past pruning. So stop feeding your perennials. Do continue to feed your lawn with your winter. And stop pruning, because the plants have to now start to become dormant. Even though it's only the middle of August, you don't want to cause a flush of growth.
Well, I know it
sounds kind of weird, because in September everybody's going to be saying, what can I prune now? And I'm going to tell you nothing.
Yes.
But go ahead.
I was thinking, too, and I was thinking about lawns themselves, and I know we'll get questions about this. Given the hot weather, and usually the window of opportunity for seeding, grass seeding, is like, what, middle of August to the middle of September? I wonder if we could stretch it this year.
We might be able to, depending upon what we think fall is going to be like, and when you think, if you think your grass is going to get, you know, have 6 to 8 weeks to grow, and before you're going to get that first frost, before you get the first snowfall that kills the grass that stays.
We'll be watching the forecast for sure. All right, Teresa, let's grab a phone call. Gary is first up. You're calling in from St. Louis Park, I believe, this morning. Gary, good morning. What's your question for Teresa?
Hi, good morning, Denny. Good morning, Teresa. Teresa, I just had my lawn aerated yesterday. Mm-hmm. How long should I wait before I mow it, and how often should I water it?
I would water it just as you have been watering it. That needs about an inch of water a week. So you want, between you and Mom Nature, do that. You can back off a little bit on the mowing if it's not growing very quickly. In this heat, it may or may not be growing. With this extra water we've gotten, you may see a flush of growth, so you may have to water. But the aeration should not impact how you need to water or the mowing. And good to aerate, because you're setting yourself up for some good overseeding if you need it. Excellent. Well done, Gary.
Yeah, Gary, I got to do that. Have that done too this fall, this summer, I should say. What is the best texture? Says Teresa. What is the best plant ornamental grasses in the spring or now or in the fall? As far as ornamental grasses, when to plant?
You know, with the heat that we're going to have with the next week or so, I wouldn't do a lot of planting right now. It's stressful on you and on the plants, so don't do it right now. Fall's a great time to get those ornamental grasses in, the prairie grasses, and it's a great time to find bargains at the nurseries. And so fall's a great time. So spring or fall works either one really well. I like fall because it's a little cooler on you. Do it earlier fall, like mid-September or earlier. Get those plants in. You can get good deals at the markets. And then your plants get really well rooted. And if you want to, just give them a little extra protection the very first year going through winter with a little maybe extra mulch around them just for the first year, and then they'll be fine after that.
Now, what's the proper pronunciation? I remember my mom called them peonies. Are they peonies or peonies?
Yes. Oh. You can do either one. One is more British. One is more American. They're both fine. It's like clematis or clematis. You can do either one. In the United States, normally we are emphasizing the second syllable. And in Britain, in England, it's the first syllable. So half a dozen of the other. You can be really posh if you want and say peonies if you want to. Whatever you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Tomato. Okay.
Tomato, yes.
The question is, though, is it a good time to transplant peonies and rhubarb?
Yes, it is. Yes, this is a great time to do it. Your irises, your peonies, your rhubarb, if you want to. Spring is better in for rhubarb, but you can do it now. Again, I would just say you know, do it when it's easier for you and it's easier on the plant. If you're going to have a day or two of slightly cooler weather, do it maybe first thing in the morning or in the later afternoon when it gets a little cooler so the plant can kind of recover overnight. And if you're not dividing the peony, just have the other hole already dug and had your amendments of compost and everything already. So you can lift that plant out, disturb the roots as little as possible, plant it in the next pot, place you want to plant it. Make sure that you're planting it high so that the eyes, the little growing red growing pointed tips on the root ball are right at the surface or no more than, say, half an inch to an inch deep. If you plant your peonies too deep, the eyes will become blind and they won't flower for you. If you disturb the roots too much, they may pout for two or three years before they flower again. If you have to divide them, you're probably going to see some lack of flowering for the next few years, but they'll recover and then they'll bloom again.
Okay. I know we have to break momentarily, but we were getting a bunch of phone calls as well as texts. Let's grab a phone call from Faith, calling in from Annandale, I believe, this morning. Faith, good morning. What is your question for Master Gardener Teresa?
Good morning. Okay, good morning. Thank you. I have a balloon flower that used to always just be a moderate size, and then all of a sudden one half of it got real tall and straggly and leggy. Do you have any idea what's going on with that?
It's probably just the temperature, and maybe it got a little extra fertilization on that side of the plant for some reason, or a little extra watering compared to the other. I don't know why it would suddenly just jump up and get a lot taller, but if you don't like it that tall, you can trim it back. Otherwise, just know it'll probably be all normal next year, hopefully, knock on wood. That's an interesting question, Faith.
Thank you, Faith. Gary, calling in from St. Paul this morning, I do believe. Gary, you're on CCO with Master Gardener Teresa Rooney.
Oh, hi. I had an aeration question. I had a section on my lawn that I replanted last year, and it's come in real well. Mm-hmm. I'm going to aerate the lawn. Should I skip that particular area, though? It's Kentucky bluegrass and fescues.
You could aerate it again if there's been a lot of traffic in your yard. If you did the good prep last year when you overseeded or when it's come in, you dug some organic matter in and it hasn't experienced a whole lot of rugby play or, you know, wrestling on the lawn right there, you could ignore that section and then just the next time you aerate, just aerate it with the rest of your lawn. So depending upon what your prep work was last year for the planting and how much compaction it's gotten there, that will indicate whether or not you need to aerate. Good luck with that, Gary.
Before we break, I want to grab one more call, and then we'll grab some text messages. Chris, calling in from Egan this morning. Chris, you're on CCO. What is your question, please?
Good morning. I love listening to you guys.
Thank you.
I have a whole bunch of cucumber plants in my garden, and they have produced fantastically. And they're still producing, but the leaves are all dying. Is that normal?
It could have gotten some kind of cucumber disease, a virus or something. As long as it's still producing, I would just say go ahead. Yep, keep going. When you see those leaves start to die, take those off and then sterilize if you're using pruners before you go to the next plant. If you have to cut more, do more pruning with that. But sometimes toward the end of the season, they just get a little stressed and they're more susceptible to lots of diseases. Good luck with that, Chris.
All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with more of our Smart Garden Show here on CCO. I can tell you we are heading today to a high near 95, but the heat index values will be up to about 102. So keep that in mind. Sunny and hot today. Right now on CCO, 71 degrees. Hey, stay with us. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. You're with Master Gardener Teresa Rooney answering those lawn and garden questions. I should remind our listeners, our friends and your colleagues, Julie Weisenhorn and turf expert John Trappi will be with me at the Met. We're doing a one-time show, appearing one time only at the Minnesota State Fair a week from today. So don't miss that. And if you're going to be out there, You can come up to the broadcast center there, and you can ask your questions live. Of course, we'll still be taking our phone calls and text messages as well. In the meantime, we'll take your phone calls and text messages this morning on our Smart Garden Show. As I said, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney doing the work. 651-461-9226. Let's see here. Teresa?
Yes.
I'm looking at... Oh, we have so many. All right. Here's a recommendation they request for how and when to plant wild lupin seed. The soil is sandy.
You could plant it in the fall. That would probably be the best time because it does need to go through the winterization, the stratification. Otherwise, you could do a winter sowing in milk jugs in January and then carefully transplant it in the spring as soon as it comes up and the soil is ready. I'd try probably seeding in the fall. Good luck.
Okay. This listener wants to know, how can I tell when my watermelon ready to pick? I picked one already, and it was still green on the inside.
Oh, that's always tricky for me to tell. I have some things in my mind, but I don't know if they're all right. Usually with the squashes and the watermelon is when the stem starts to harden off and you can see that it's starting to die back. Otherwise, I would go to the extension website, extension.umn.edu, and it'll tell you on there all the special ways to do it. They're thumping it and seeing if it has a yellow spot on the bottom and the rest is bright green, but I don't want to tell you the wrong thing because I even have problems picking out watermelon at the supermarket. So,
yeah, we've been having the same.
I would go to the extension website for that one.
I don't know what it is. It's my lack of talent, but we love watermelon here, mm-hmm. and I've been picking them up here and there. And you know, maybe if there's six watermelon, maybe one is good, maybe two.
Sometimes they get so overwatered that the taste kind of washes out, and you just never know how they're going to be. I know it has something to do with the size of the bands, the striping on them, and then that they do need the yellow spot on the bottom. That means they've been sitting for a while, so that part has started not to be photosynthesizing as much anymore. But other than that, and a hollowy sound, I don't know.
Well, I'm going to pick up another one this time. I know that Jerry Untied has grown some good stuff.
So that'll be good, because the local stuff is really good.
Yeah. Texter says, greetings. We have 30-some trees in our development with, quote, gall mites. Will they recover?
Oh, they'll be just fine. As long as the leaves are still green and they're still photosynthesizing, sometimes even the gall mites will kind of crinkle the leaves a little bit, but the trees will recover just fine. You may never have them again. You may get them every year, but gall mites and trees kind of go together. So, yep, that's just little places on the tree on the leaves where they kind of have funny bumps, and there's just little insects in there either hatching out or it's just a reaction to the insect biting it, and like a mosquito bite when we get a little irritation. So, nothing to worry about.
All right, good. Another texter says this, Teresa: should hydrangeas be pruned in the fall after blooming?
That one's totally up to the kind of hydrangea it is, where it sets its flowers, and if you have a new hydrangea that is more of a tree or a shrub that you're trying to get some height on, sometimes those flowers, you may need to prune off some of the flowers so that the winter doesn't get a lot of snow on them and drag those branches down and break them. But I would look at what kind of hydrangea you have and figure out what the pruning is, whether it blooms on old wood or new wood or both. And that will tell you how to prune it. You could look at the extension website, extension.umn.edu, and also go out to the Arboretum, which was a gem in Minnesota. They have a hydrangea testing area where they've planted a lot of hydrangeas, and you can see what your specific hydrangea is supposed to be looking like. And there may be some more information out there, cards and things like that. That'll give you some information. But the extension website will tell you exactly which hydrangea and how to prune it.
But, yeah, get to the arboretum. I mean, you talk about if you're planning on planting various shrubs or trees or whatever the case may be in your landscape, they have you can visualize that. You can see
all the beauty. You can see what it looks like. And sometimes you can get ideas like, oh, I never thought to combine those two perennials together or those three perennials together. Or you don't want to walk 3 mile drive, take a tram tour. Go up to the Beeline shuttle and get up to the bee area and the urban farm at the Arb. And it's just an amazing place to learn a lot of stuff. And bring your visitors. Yep. They'll want to move to Minnesota, just come to the Arboretum.
The University of Minnesota Landscape Arboretum. Just go west on Highway 5 and get online. You can make reservations very easy, and it makes it very easy to park there, as I've said before. All right, we need to take a break for that hot forecast. We'll do that. Have another half hour of our Smart Garden Show on the way. 651-461-9226. It's a Saturday in CCO land from News Talk 830. This is WCCO. And good morning. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney answering those lawn and garden questions at our usual number. If it's a phone call you want or a text, either way, 651-461-9226. Teresa, speaking of Master Gardener, which you are, what's the deal with the program? Is this the beginning of that program now or what?
This is the beginning of registration for it. So go ahead and go to the Extension website and go down near the bottom, and it says Become a Master Gardener Volunteer. Click on that, and it'll talk you right through it. The registration or the your submission is due by October 1st, but it's going to be hot and icky today, so why not do it today? Get the paperwork going and go like that. There are scholarships available if you need them. That always is a possibility. We do have some of those available. Or you can send an email to MG for Master Gardener Web at extension.umn and send your email off to request the paperwork. So please come and join us. We would love to have you.
What about qualifications? I'm thinking, well, what if I just sign up? Well, I don't have gardening experience, just minimal.
Denny, you could be a wonderful master gardener. Master gardeners are people who love to learn about gardening, want to share research-based information with their community, and love to talk to people about gardening. So if that's what you are, if that's the kind of person you are, you don't need to have extensive gardening background. It helps, but it's not necessary. You just need that desire to learn about research-based information and wanting to share that with your community. Master gardeners are volunteers. We work in our community to bring that information to the people that are in our communities so we can all grow healthy lawns and trees and shrubs and vegetables and flowers, and we can learn about watering wisely and taking care of our environment and nearby nature and all those kind of wonderful things. So if you think you are interested in the program, please apply.
Very good. you and your colleagues are educators. That's what you do.
We are educators, And if you love just talking about gardening and geeking out on it, you're a master gardener. Come and join us.
Perfect candidate. All right. Back to work. Tector says 14 Techne arborvitaes as a hedge. They are around 25 years old, quite tall. I want to top them off. Is that a good idea?
Topping is never a really good idea. If you need to prune them back a little bit, you can. If they're not going to be running into wires and that, you don't really need to top them. You can do a little pruning. Just get up there every year and do a little pruning and keep the heights down a little bit. They want to be probably about 25 feet tall, so they've got another 11, 12 feet to go. And they don't stop growing at 25 feet. They will keep growing. So always remember to look at the size of the plant that you're planting, what its expected height and width is, so you plant it in the right place.
Very good. Here's a good question. What exactly is overseeding? Is it just putting down seed, or do you need additional soil, etc.?
Oh, that's a really good question. So overseeding is something we normally have do in our lawns because our lawns get a little sparse sometimes. So what you want to do is you want to mow your grass a little bit shorter than you normally would, and then you want to rake up all the extra stuff that's out there so you can see some of the bare patches. And then you just sprinkle seeds over the area that you need to oversow. You press them into the soil, or you press them so they have really good seed-to-soil contact. contact. Because if they're just floating up in the air, they're never going to root and sprout those little seeds. They need to be on the ground. And then you just keep that moist until the seeds sprout. Treat them like little babies when they're tall enough to have been mowed 2 to 3 times because the seedlings have gotten that big. Then you can apply your winterizer. So you've kind of got to get your seedlings, your overseeding done earlier in the fall rather than later if you're going to do winterizer.
Good question. Texter says, didn't prune my bushes at all this year. Will they be okay until after they flower in the spring?
They should be just fine. They may just be a little scraggly looking. If something's whacking you in the face when you're going to be shoveling winter snow or something like that, you can prune that one little branch back if you need to. Otherwise, for the most part, plants don't need to be pruned. We just do it for aesthetic reasons and to keep them within the space and the aesthetic that we're looking for.
Okay. Another listener says, I planted 2 apple trees this spring. They did not produce any apples yet. Do I need to fertilize them is one question. Also, is there an organic way to protect them from pests?
Yes. Yes and yes. So if you want to fertilize them, I would probably wait till the spring and just top dress with a little compost. It depends on what kind of roots they are on, what rootstock they're on. If they're on a dwarf rootstock, those trees will probably be producing when they're about 3 to 5 years old. If they're on a semi-dwarfing rootstock, that limits the size to a certain height. That will be 5 to 7 years before they're old enough to produce fruits for you. And then if they're on just a regular rootstock, not a a dwarfing rootstock, that could take up to 10 years. Honeycrisp take a little longer to produce, so you may want to add a few years onto that, and you should be fine then. What was the second question? It was feeding it and...
About pests.
Thank you, and pests. And organic pests. So there are some ways you can make sure you clean up any fruit that falls and any leaves that fall down. Move those out into your compost bins. You can protect the fruit when it does come out with little bags, Ziploc bags or nylon stocking bags. And you can also spray with a kale and spray if you need to protect against pests that way. So those are some of your alternatives for organic pest control. And you do need 2 different kinds of apples. So if you put in 2 Honeycrisp, hopefully there's some apple around the area that will be able to cross-pollinate with that. The 2 Honeycrisp will not cross-pollinate. You need 2 different varieties of apples.
All right. Yeah, good point. This listener, they said that we will be in Texas from Thanksgiving to late April. Can we prune our apple tree in November?
You can. I would do it the very latest that you can, or if you're coming back early April, wait till early April to do it. If you can, wait as long as close to your leaving in November as possible. Otherwise, if it's an early April arrival, do it early April. But you can. If we're into a really... We haven't had much frost in your area, and it's still really green and growing, and we haven't even gone into the second. We're still in just a hot winter, and fall doesn't even look like to be showing up in November. I would wait until spring then and just do a late pruning at that time.
Okay. This listener wants to know, what causes bright yellow yarrow flowers to lose their luster and turn into an almost rusty brown?
Oh, that means the flower has gone past. It's basically dead. It's like if you have a rose and you pick it, and then it slowly dies and turns brown. So it's just the flowers have gone past their prime. They've flowered. They've done what they're going to do, and the flowers are now dead. You can cut those off if you don't want to look at them very long.
Okay. Here's a lawn question, and I just remind our listeners, Teresa, that along with Julie Weisenauer, next Saturday, a week
John
from today
will be
at the
there.
Fair, yes, the turf guru, Dr. John Trappi, will be answering those turf questions. But here's one I know you can field. Is it a good time to plant grass seed, and should I aerate before I plant?
I would aerate before you plant, and then I would, so you can aerate now, I would probably wait till the weather's just a titch cooler toward the end of August, if possible, into the beginning of September, or if we get a week where it's going to be fairly cool, fairly normal, not this hot stuff today. That's just ridiculous. You don't need to be out there. You have to keep the grass, the seed, moist. So think about how you're going to keep that seed moist on 105-degree temperature. day or what it feels like, you'd have to be out there watering two or three times. And are you willing to do that till the grass sprouts? And are you willing to take care of all that extra watering it needs in the heat and those that stressful time? So I'd back off, but I'd aerate now, get the ground ready, and then when it cools down just a little bit, go ahead and overseed with your grass seed.
Very good. Just joining us, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney, answering those lawn and garden questions on our Smart Garden Show. Here's another one. We have an ornamental crabapple tree that is so much lower growth we cannot mow under it very well. Can we prune or trim the lower branches, or will it ruin the shape forever?
If you want to limit up a little bit, you can. I would probably do that in the spring, and you may want to mark some branches right now, tie a little bit of ribbon or string around them, so when you go out there in January, February, or March, and you're pruning, limbing up the apple tree, remember you only want to take off like one quarter of the entire amount of growth. So look at the whole big tree and think, I'm only going to remove these three branches this year, and next year I'll remove the next three branches and limit up a little bit so I can get under there and mow. Otherwise, just limit up slightly and grow something else instead of grass under there. Put just a mulch down or do a little woodland garden under there, and that could be very attractive with your crab apple. But once you start limbing it up, you are making it into more of a tree shape than a bush shape, and so that doesn't necessarily wreck the view. It just changes what it looks like.
Okay. This listener wants to know, how do I get rid of webworms in my birch tree?
You know, the easiest way is just to, if you can, do some cutting them out or just destroy the webbing. If it's too far up, I would go to the extension website. The webworms are protected with their webbing, so it's hard to get chemicals in there. You may want to use a systemic, but then again, that impacts anything that eats the tree, including pretty butterflies and things like caterpillars of good butterflies that you want to have. So I would go to the extension website, extension.umn.edu. And if that looks like something that might be beyond you, call a certified arborist and have them come out and ask them what they would do and have them treat the tree for you. They would be able to get up in there with ladders and things and take out the webbing or do some sprays if they need to. Otherwise, if it's a one-shot deal, it may defoliate the tree this year, but it'll be fine next year. Just baby your tree a little bit.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, Teresa. Be right back with more of our Smart Garden Show. We are on our way, temperature-wise, to 95 today. Right now on CCO, 71 degrees. Stay with us. Temperature-wise, to 95 today. Right now on CCO, 71 degrees. Stay with us. Good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show here every Saturday on CCO in the 8 o'clock hour. This morning, Master Gardener Teresa Rooney answering those lawn and garden questions at 651-461-9226. And Teresa, as usual, we have many of them. And again, we always like to urge our listeners to check out the University of Minnesota website, extension.umn.edu, a great source of information about lawns and gardens, you name it, it's in there.
And there's lots of pretty pictures to look at, too. So
yes,
enjoy that during the heat.
Too.
Stay inside, get a cool beverage, hydrate, and just look at the website.
Yeah, extension.umn.edu, we love it. Texter says something I can relate to here. Along the south side of my house, I planted, they say, a tomato plant in each of two raised 2x4 planter boxes, one tomato plant in the ground. The plant in the ground is growing well. The two in the raised boxes are withering at the top. Is this a problem due to being in the boxes or due to the amount of watering, do you think?
It's probably the stress from being in hotter soil, lots of extra water and lots of extra heat, and the roots only have the little box to look for food in and water, and they don't have the coolness of all the entire soil like the ones in the soil do. So even though the soil at top feels warm, there's a little more moisture, a little bit deeper, and our pots aren't that deep. So it's just a more stressful situation in that little container. Even though it's a good-sized container, it's still a little more stressful situation.
Okay.
So, yeah.
This listener says via text, after splitting hosta, the section that was taken off is growing and healthy, but never gets any bigger. Is that normal?
That's not normal. It depends on when they split them. If it's just this year, the plant has to get new roots and everything else, and it's going to take a little while to get bigger again. If it's been a few years, I'd consider maybe top dressing that area a little bit, and the soil may be a little too lean, or there may be some other reasons why the plant isn't getting bigger. But I would think it's probably something to do with the soil if the plant has been divided for a number of years.
Okay. We have the smartest of listeners, and we do have, obviously, here somebody who knows what to help us out with picking a good watermelon.
Oh, good. I was hoping somebody would share that information.
He says, for watermelon, look for the curly pigtail on the vine opposite the stem to the watermelon. It should be dried up and brown.
Okay.
The field spot should be deep yellow, not pale yellow.
Ah, okay.
Sound is subjective.
That
now
is
for
true.
Squash, the stem should be dried up completely. Cantaloupe stems will easily separate from the melon when ripe. So there you go. You've got.
And I've heard about pressing your thumbnail into the rind to see if it goes in really easy. But then I think, well, I don't want all those little pokies in my vegetables out there in the ground, because that just lets diseases and bugs and everything else. And so I've always wondered about that one. It's like, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Well, I may test out that theory, advice from
a nice
from this,
deep yellow spot, and yeah. then yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the color should not be just pale yellow.
Pale yellow.
Deep
it's just,
yellow.
Yep. Deep yellow.
Say.
Okay.
Okay. Can
Thank
I spray
you.
For
Thank
Creeping
you,
Charlie
person.
Now? And what's the best spray to use?
Creeping Charlie, I'd probably wait just a little while longer. It's too hot. So any spray you get and any herbicide you get, it will say it kills Creeping Charlie. So you want to make sure that Creeping Charlie is listed as one of the plants it's going to kill. Then you want to read the instructions. And the instructions will say something like, do not spray on windy days, which we're supposed to have. Do not spray if the temperature is above such and such a degrees. It's usually like 82 to 85 degrees, which we're going to have for the next week at least. So you have to consider those things. Just make sure you read the label. When you're at the nursery getting the herbicide, if you can't figure out which one, because there's like 4 different kinds or 12 different kinds out there, talk to the nursery people. They will know which one will work best for Creeping Charlie. They'll show you that it kills Creeping Charlie on the label, and then they should instruct you to read the label and understand it and give you some pointers. Not on a windy day, even a breeze of 5 miles an hour is way too fast, and not on a hot day or a really cold day. So you have to read the instructions, because each one will be slightly different.
Okay. Here's a good candidate for the university website, I think. What bush is good that does not need trimming? It would be in full sun.
It really depends how big you want to get it. And here, again, I think Denny's right. Go to the Extension website. You can actually go to one part of the Extension website. It's a landscaping part, and it will actually, you can put in, I want a bush for full sun, sandy soil, getting 3 to 6 feet tall and 3 feet wide. And it will bring up bushes that are that for zone 3 or 4 or whatever you're in. So it's a wonderful feature of the Extension website. So please go to the Extension website, extension.umn.edu, and you'll go right into that list of plants. It's just amazing.
Another texter says, why is one of our 2 elderberry plants wilting? They're separated by 40 feet.
In the one area, the plant could be a weaker plant, so it's under more stress. It's not dealing with the stress as well. It could be that there's a big rock under there, so it's not, the soil isn't as deep as you think it is. It's not getting as much water. The other plant may be getting more water than you think it's getting, and so it's a little healthier. It just, there's a difference between the plants and or the soil conditions, and then the stress of the situation we're in. So you just have to figure out what could be going on there. The plant may need just a little more water than it's getting. You can always top dress with a little compost.
A couple of minutes to go on the show, Teresa. A lawn question, an aeration question. Does aeration harm silver maple roots?
It can. Yes, it can. So if you're if you've got an aerator, which is where it pulls up the plugs, it's actually punching down into the soil, and it will punch into those silver maple roots, the surface roots. So you want to avoid those roots if at all possible. So don't aerate under your silver maple, or if you know there's not roots in this one area, you can aerate there. But yeah, you don't want to aerate over tree roots. That is correct.
This listener would like you to address a perennial grass seed versus annual grass seed.
Okay, so that's a really good question. So when you look at the grass seed that you're buying for overseeding for your lawn or starting your lawn, it will tell you it's this much, this kind of Kentucky bluegrass and this kind of perennial rye and this annual rye and this whatever it's got in there. It'll tell you the fescues. It'll tell you all that's in there and the percentages. You want to get mostly perennial grasses. The annual grasses come up a little bit faster. They hold the place so that the other seeds around them, the perennials, can kind of get going a little bit, but then the annual grass will die over winter, and that will leave little holes all over where those grasses died. So then the other perennials can grow and take over that spot. So they're kind of like a little placeholder for a bit. But if you have a grass seed mix that's really heavy on annuals, they're all going to die in the wintertime. So then only maybe half your plants are coming up again next year. They're growing again next year. So the annual grass is just really a placeholder, and you don't need a big percentage. So good grass seed mixes won't have a high percentage usually of the annual rye grasses. That's a really good question, though.
Yeah, it was a good question, and we have less, probably maybe 30 seconds, if you can give us a thumbnail sketch of how to become a master gardener, how to sign up.
Okay, go to the Extension website, extension.umn.edu, click on how to become a master gardener. It'll talk you through it, and there are scholarships available if you need them, but we'd love to have you. If you like talking plants and like to learn about Extension, our research-based information, and sharing that with your neighbors, you can become a master gardener.
Yeah, and again, don't forget to visit the Arboretum. Just go west on Highway 5. You're going to love
right.
that place. Just arrange it all online. Very easy to
yep.
do.
And you do need to register online. Yep.
All right. Teresa, thank you so much for all the good work. Always a pleasure. And just a reminder that next Saturday, week from today, we'll be at the fair with Julie and Dr. John Trappi. Teresa, let's talk again soon.
We will do that. Everybody stay cool and hydrate. Take care.
Thank you so much. Master Gardener Teresa Rooney. Next up on CCO, get those home improvement questions ready for Andy Lindis from Lindis Construction. Probably a lot of hail questions. The damage is one of the questions we'll be hearing about next hour here on Newstalk 830 WCCO.